No, we're going to wait until this sort of winds itself on a bit. So, what is your position at the US Army Research Office, which you took up in January 1957, arranged for you, or did you simply apply for a job as your employment at the National Science Foundation was obviously temporary?
I was scouting around for what other opportunities would surface, and I heard that they were looking for someone down here, and so I applied for it and got a transfer, and that's the way that came about.
Was your work here similar to your work in Washington, broadly speaking?
Well, it was similar in the sense that it was reviewing research proposals and reports from universities and other institutions, and deciding and recommending which ones would be the most fruitful to support, and keeping in contact with them and offering suggestions. It differed in the sense that I had no contact with production facilities or applied research, except insofar as findings could be transmitted to Army laboratories or something of that sort. So it was pretty much like the relationship I had with the university research projects, but on a broader scale, more universities and beyond polymers.
Right, right. Was it perhaps also more hands-on, if it were?
Well, yes, it was more hands-off. In other words, we were in this type of operation, we tended to let the university project directors have their head pretty much, and also they could select things that might not have any tangible application.
Was there a good relationship between the Army and the university when you joined in the 1950s, in the late 1950s?
Oh yeah, all the university contacts that I had expressed satisfaction with the relationship with the Army, and said they appreciated the type of relationship that existed.
The kind of work you were doing or supervising was sort of basic research. So how sort of defense related was that?
You can say this, that the Defense Department decided, before establishing the office here, the Army decided, the Navy decided first, that they ought to support some projects that were basic research that might not be directly connected to a military application.
Right.
But if they supported enough of them, and enough of them that were well chosen, they ought to be fruitful of germs of wisdom that would be applicable perhaps in some unforeseen variation. And so the Navy got set up with it, and the Air Force did, and then the Army decided, well, we ought to do the same thing. And so they said, now here we're going to have this office that's going to support basic research. It was anything that's directly obvious to the military laboratories, they should support themselves. But we will support things that they have to have a good scientific merit. You ought to be able to make a good case that you're exploring scientific laws and trying to find out things that will throw light on some subject that will give rise to something beneficial, but it doesn't have to be to make a better grease for a wheel or something like that.
I mean, can you give a particular example of the kind of route that they sort of funded?
Well, yeah, there was one thing that comes to mind, and there were others, but this is, I think, the best one. Professor Tobolsky at Princeton was working on the preparation of polymers, and how to control their polymerization such that it gets the polymerization stopped at a certain point to do a certain particular thing. And he found out a method of giving very precise control of the polymerization to get any particular kind of the quality in the product that he wanted. And the Army was looking for some kind of, they were using synthetic rubber type polymers in a binder for a solid propellant, but they weren't able to get the right kind of a composition. And they read one of his reports and found just what they wanted, and it did just the ideal thing. That's the kind of a thing.
Did the good relationship between the Army and the university deteriorate as a result of the anti-Vietnam War protest in the middle to late 60s?
Oh, I don't think so. Not from our standpoint in this office here. I mean, we still receive proposals and evaluated them, and of course, there were more meetings about, what's the problem in the Vietnam War, and the Army labs would get it, and they would scrutinize. We would send our proposals to the Army laboratories for comments, and if they saw something that would be beneficial to them, they would tell us that's another reason why you ought to support this proposal. But we didn't get any case where they say, oh, this would never help us in Vietnam, and so don't support it or anything like that.
So you had no problem from that point of view?
No.
William Baker has criticized today's young scientists for their reluctance to do defense-related research. I think you're thinking of more sort of closely related to defense. Do you think that young scientists are less willing to carry out defense-related research compared, say, with their counterparts in the 1930s or 1950s?
Well, of course, we haven't seen it here on of course, when they send a proposal into the Army, that shows that they want to work. And if it's basic research, it isn't really geared into working on a new explosive or a new tank right off anyway, so we wouldn't see it that way. Our office got into a kind of a hassle during the hiatus of the 60s when everybody was waving flags, waving banners against the wars, but they just didn't want the Army office on the campus, you know. And so the Army finally moved the office off the campus, but the funny thing is, they didn't move it off the campus until the year I retired, which, and the thing was all over then. Nobody was jumping up and down and shouting about it. But apparently, somebody generated the idea that, oh, you ought to get it off the campus. Or it just circulated, hibernated and incubated, and finally it came to a head and they moved it off the campus. But most of the people in the chemistry division, professors and most of the others that knew us, didn't want us to go, but some of the higher ups did, or some of the political people.
So you had close links then with the University of North Carolina?
Not North Carolina, Duke. It was on the Duke campus.
On Duke campus, right.
Yeah, we moved off the Duke campus.
I mean, what kind of link did we have with the faculty at Duke?
Oh, very good. The chemistry professors were one of them served as a consultant to the chemistry division, and the physics had close contacts with physics, and engineering with engineering. They were very close relationships. We used to eat in the faculty dining room and all that sort of thing.
Given the present congressional concern about getting the maximum bang for their buck, do you think that the U.S. Army Research Office spent their funds wisely in the period you were working there?
Well, I gather from what I've heard that they, of course, since it is Army and it's part of defense, and Reagan is sort of he's sort of sticking up for defense, so the Army hasn't had any, I don't think, had any squeeze on their funds.
No. I mean, do you think the money was spent efficiently there?
Oh, I think it was in this office.
In this office.
Yeah. I think under their program, it was spent about as good as it could have been.
Why did you carry on working until you were 70? I mean, would you like the job so much? Or?
Oh, well, I felt in good health and able to carry on and didn't feel any pains. And matter of fact, I don't think I would have quit if it hadn't been at that time. 70 was mandatory retirement age.
Oh, I see. So you were happy enough to carry on working?
I can be happy not working, but I can be happy working too.
Okay.
And I always enjoyed my work, or I wouldn't have stayed with it as long as I did.
What have you done since your retirement? I mean, have you done any consulting, for example?
Oh, I haven't. Well, I did a couple of jobs for the office, the consulting, and otherwise I keep active in the local sections of the American Chemical Society, the American Institute of Chemical Engineers, and the chemical section, local chemical section, has a subgroup of the polymer group that I've been active in. I've been chairman and treasurer of that, and so I go to those meetings, and I go to other meetings as they have at Duke seminars and things. And they have good libraries here. I go to City Library, and I can also go to the UNC Library. I can go to the Duke Library. I can go to the NC State Library over in Raleigh anytime I choose to.
So, have you kept any close friendships up since your synthetic rubber days?
Any friends up with the rubber people? Or
no.
I talked to Jim Deani just about a week ago on the phone, and I told him about you coming over to see me. And,
what did he make any comment on that?
He said he had known about the project, but he hadn't heard from you as yet.
Yeah, well, we intend to do a full-blown oral interview on them.
Of course, here I have, there's in this area, there's Bill Krigbaum of Duke is in polymers. And he used to be in the devised section at Cornell, working for his PhD. I know him real well. And there's another fellow at Duke that's in the biomedical that's working in polymers that I know real well, Howard Clark. One guy I know well, works for IBM, who's Don Price was with, used to work for Shell Chemical. He knew about the Shell plant out on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Let's see, over at, over at State, there's a fellow that was at Naugatuck early in the normal program. I think him in about a minute. And Joe Fall is a fellow that I keep in communication with. He was a consultant for the Office of Naval Research, and also for the Office of Rubber Director, and also for General Tire for a while.
Mm. I say, is there anybody? One sort of final question we can put on the tape for record is, who do we feel I should interview now? I mean, I'm already down to interview Willard Ashby and Donald Green from Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And I may also be talking to Howard Brown, who used to work with Seamon at Blue Ridge. And we're also going to have oral histories with people like Morris Morton, James Diani, Devil Brew, like that. Can you think of anyone else who might be worth interviewing and who might do
well? How about somebody at the Bureau of Standards?
Okay, can you name any particular name?
Well, Bob Steeler would be very good. Yeah, he's still working there. Robert Steeler, Steehler.
No. Anyone else?
You want to get anybody from the production division that would tell you about how the plants were built or how many plants went in and things like that?
Anybody?
Walter Munster. He has a farm out in the Shenandoah Valley. I don't know whether you could get him into Washington. Well, you might look down. You have this copy, don't you?
Well, we're having a copy sent to us, if you want it.
Oh, I see.
If you want to keep it, that's fine.
Somebody in Washington is, let's see. Well, it could, Dick Harmon, who edited this thing. In the Bureau of Standards, I guess Lawrence Wood is still in the Bureau. He'd be very good.
Right.
He has a nice article in here about how when he... And, of course, Charlie Perry, he wrote this article in here. But, Jim Sears, would know about the how they restricted the use of natural rubber through the war period. If that's of any use to you, how they said you could only use so much in tires and so much. About the disposal. About the disposal program, Joe Fall went around and briefed the disposal members of the disposal committee, sort of got them acquainted with the problems or with the value of the plant. He's up in Boston, if you want to. J.H. Fall.
Okay, fine.
You want to copy that down? Or?
That's okay. We'll get it on the table.
Oh, okay.
And they'll be trying to cry.
Oh, okay. You got it on there. Okay.
Let's just prevent the need for any note taking. Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been very good. Hope to get it transcribed in the not too distant future, and I'll send you a copy.
Okay, that'll be fine.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we'll better. How long would it take to?